In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
In 2021, a young Black Canadian can complete 12 years of schooling plus post-secondary education without seeing a single lesson about their own history, never learning about Canada's two-century-long history of slavery or its legislation of Black segregated schools or anything, really, about Black history in Canada. When George Floyd was killed last summer, people took to the streets, but they also took to the bookstores. The bestseller lists were overrun by narratives written by Black authors as North American societies were shaken into learning about a history they had never before heard in their classrooms. This isn't a new conversation. Black educators, Black parents, and even Black youth have been demanding that their histories be taught and shared in textbooks and mandatory courses. After the summer of racial reckoning, something has finally shifted. I'm Fatma Sayed, sitting in for Jordan Keith Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Eternity Martis is the best-selling author of They Said This Would Be Fun, a memoir detailing her time as one of the few Black students at Western University. She's also the course developer and instructor of Reporting on Race, Black Communities in the Media, at Ryerson School of Journalism. Hi, Eternity.
Hi, Fatima.
Thanks so much for being here. It's Black History Month, and the first one we've had since everything that happened in 2020.
Yes. Yeah, it's been a long journey to get here, to February in general, but also to Black History Month.
So there's a lot to talk about, but I want to start first with your book. Congratulations on how awesome it is.
Thank you.
You talk a lot about being a Black student in a largely white campus at Western University, and you briefly touch upon being the token Black student in your classes. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like to be in classrooms and not learn about Black history?
Yes. Well, it's incredibly alienating, I think. And that's a word that I think I've used, that I've heard many others use, other Black students. It's tough for me, especially because I come from a very multicultural city. I'm from Toronto. And I went to a school that was predominantly Black and Southeast Asian. And we still didn't learn any Black history. So for me, I kind of came to it in the environment of London, which is incredibly white, because I grew up with an all brown family. My maternal side is from Karachi. So there was no Black history taught in our family. Nobody knew any Black history, and I didn't learn it in school. So to go from kind of being in a multicultural environment and not having any kind of background, and then going from that to being like the one Black person in all my classes in one of the whitest cities in Ontario was really jarring. And on top of all that, you don't see yourself in the syllabus at all. You don't see people who look like you. Your profs don't look like you. The course materials don't look like you, don't represent you. And so I had to do a lot of that on my own. Like, it was through reading books of my own, or through assignments when you got to choose the book that you wanted to write about. I had to do all of that by myself to go find Black authorship that matched the experience I was having, because certainly nobody else around me was having that experience of being Black on campus.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't go to high school here, but I went to university here and I did my master's here. And in both universities that I went to, we were never taught anything to do with Black Canadians or Black history. And I took courses, of literature, poli-sci, history. I even did a specific course about Canadian political history. And there was nothing in there about Black history or Black political contributions. When you were at school, what were you doing to learn that? Like, were you pitching things like for your essay topics or something to try and have those conversations? And how hard was that to do on your own?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was doing. So I had I have a degree in English. I was doing English and women's studies and a certificate in writing. And it was my English degree really where I think what I liked most about Western was that the electives were really great, but they weren't like the courses where I saw myself represented were in the electives. So I had to juggle, you know, which courses I could take. But through those and through even kind of some of the more like texts that are in the canon, I was able to say like, this is interesting. Let me go explore. Who are some similar writers? And I would Google it. And then in women's studies, there's a lot more leniency because we approach things from more of like an intersectional lens. So maybe we would read like an essay by bell hooks or Audre Lorde, and I'd be like, okay, cool. So this makes sense to me. I'm going to go read more of their work. And by reading more of their work, I learned more, more about Black feminists, for example, or more about Black scholars. So it was kind of like a growing thing. I kind of took the syllabus, what I had, saw things that I liked, saw things that I saw myself represented in, and then started to like branch out from there on my own. It wasn't too hard to do. I think I had really great professors who encouraged that kind of stuff to kind of explore outside of the syllabus. And it wasn't until recently that I discovered that changing a syllabus is actually a lot of work. It's not just a simple like, okay, we're going to do this. There's a process involved. So I think a lot of my instructors, especially in the women's studies department, were very open and encouraging about looking at other texts and other writers and authors and scholars and theorists who weren't necessarily on the syllabus.
Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit. When you were at university, you were kind of doing this on your own. We're now in 2021 in the wake of, you know, the George Floyd protest and a huge Black Lives Matters movement that seriously seems to have caught people's attention, finally, right? And you helped create a syllabus for Ryerson's School of Journalism, the first one about Black communities and media. Can you describe sort of how that came about and sort of what that process was like of creating a syllabus brand new?
Yeah, so the course actually came out, it was a direct result of the protests happening over the summer. And it was four brilliant Black journalism students at the time who were protesting for this course. And so I was lucky enough to be able to teach it. And I think what was so intimidating about it was exactly that. There's no course like this. There's nothing I can look to figure out how to create this course. And I was talking to Adrian Harewood about it because he has a similar course about diversity at Carleton. And he said, what are the things that made you you? What made you a journalist? And I thought about it, and it really was all the stuff that I had done in the past, all the times where I wasn't able to see myself represented in a syllabus, and I went looking for things, or the moments in class where I did read something, and I was like, oh my goodness, I get it, my experience makes sense. Those were the things that made me a journalist. And so I approached this course with a very unorthodox approach. So the course was about journalism, but I think that to have a journalism course, you need to be critically thinking when you're talking about Black communities. So we did, you know, we did media theory, we did feminist theory, we did queer theory, we did critical race theory. We did all these things to kind of build a comprehensive, agile structure that students could learn. So when talking about Black communities, we often right now in this moment, we talk about what's happening. We don't look at the history. We don't look at why things are the way they are, because if we don't look at it, we don't know what needs to change, what has stayed the same, what, you know, none of that. So we started from the very beginning. We started from slavery. We looked at the impact of slavery today. We looked at the specificity of anti-Black racism, why it affects Black communities today. And then we looked at all the pitfalls and all the language that has kind of degraded and dehumanized Black communities. And we needed to look at all of that. We analyzed headlines. Like it was an intense class. A lot of my students said they had headaches after, but we needed to do that in order to start being more accountable. So how can we see what we did wrong if we don't know what we've done wrong? And so towards the middle and end of the class, we started to kind of come back with approaches. How do we uplift Black communities? How can we be more mindful about our own bias? How can we be more mindful about our own language? And by the end of the class, they actually did a report where they put together these best practices for reporting on like particular parts about Black communities. So reporting on police violence, how to enter and exit a community, how to report on white supremacy, how to report on Black Lives Matter and protest. And I think what's amazing about this course is that these students are so early in their careers and they have more experience about Black communities than any other journalist right now with a full-time job in a mainstream newsroom.
It sounds like a crash course, literally, on everything related to Black history in Canada.
Oh, they crashed. They crashed for sure.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
As you said, this course was created because students created a petition, right? They basically petitioned Ryerson to demanding that a Black Canadian reporting course be implemented. What was the makeup of the class itself, and what kind of response did you get to some of the topics that you were teaching?
So the makeup of the class was, I would say, the majority were people of color and non-Black people of color, and there was a handful of Black students, and the rest were allies. And it was great. I think I was worried that I have to teach this course, and I have to teach this course right during COVID when everyone's brains aren't working properly. Everyone is stressed. Everyone is anxious. And I have to cut down the work because of the environment that we're in. That's what instructors should be doing right now. So I was very pleased to know that in the not just the evaluations, but just in chatting with students, that this was, a lot of them said this was the best course they've had in their career as journalists. Like, this really prepared them. And they felt a lot stronger kind of going out and reporting on communities they didn't know about. They felt stronger as people. They felt proud as Black people. And that was really my intention, that people come away with a course that really makes them think. And that's exactly what they said it helped do. So I'm really happy about that. I know it was a lot of work for them. The readings were a lot. And it's a tough balance. And I think it's something that I will learn and other instructors will learn who teach this course. How do we now balance that crash course in Black communities in a online learning environment and still allow students to kind of learn? Because the challenge for me was that my class wasn't full of Black students. So I had to teach allies these things that they may have never known about. So a lot of people don't even know slavery existed in Canada. And then the other half of students already knew these things, and I didn't want to be talking about stuff that they were living through. So how do I create material that challenges them and they can still engage with it? And so that was the real challenge. And I think we all did a really good job at kind of figuring out what worked for the whole class.
Moving forward, what do you think are the important ingredients for more courses like this to exist? Should institutions be taking a leading role, or do such courses need to have the groundswell support that Ryerson's did?
I think it should be a really simple decision. We look at our culture, look at our current climate. We need to have a course on how to report on Black communities, because we're tired of seeing journalists, newsrooms apologize for decisions that they should have known that they shouldn't have made. So I think it's very simple. Let's just create the course. Like, I think that the fact that Ryerson saw the petition and jumped on it so quickly, right? That's a good sign. So let's keep doing that. Let's do that across different campuses. Let's make it mandatory. But I also think that we need to be hiring. There are so many great Black instructors right now and other instructors of color who could be teaching these courses. The problem is, even in the model of kind of like contract positions, which is a Canadian-wide issue, right, at universities, the money isn't that good if you are on contract. And a lot of people of color are already precariously employed. So how can you ask somebody who's going through this moment already personally to give their all to a course for a semester and not get paid fairly? So I think that that's an issue that all universities need to address before we can even think about making this mandatory. How do we support the people mental health-wise, financially, who are going to be creating these courses? It's a tremendous toll on them.
And Eternity, what about beyond journalism programs? How could the issues that you taught in 2020, you know, whether that was race or the history of slavery in Canada and so forth, how could this show up in other programs at various levels from high school to university?
Yeah, I think this is kind of, you know, not first grade stuff, but like this is stuff you learn at a young age. And there's nothing wrong with it. I think there's a fear that in Canada that we've done wrong. We've done some really malicious things in the past and we don't want to own up to it. So we just kind of plug in. We had the Underground Railroad and that was a triumph. And that's great and all, but slavery and segregation was bad here. We had segregation in Canada until the 1980s. So I think starting with books, there are a ton of books right now by black authors about our history. Starting with books in classes for young students, having this be part of the curriculum. When we talk about Black history, when we talk about history, and there was a report that found that there was only, in Ontario, there are only 13 mentions of Black history in textbooks. We need to figure out what is the issue so that we can start to implement it. Having more events, right? Like there are a lot of Black students in Ontario, especially here in Toronto. Can we have more events during Black History Month? Can we normalize it so it's every month? We need to be doing this from an early age, and there needs to be that shame aspect of it, or the fear, and perhaps the fear is that people feel that they're not prepared or know how to talk about Black people in Canada. We need to start getting rid of that or bringing in somebody who can speak to it so that we can start to do this earlier. And one thing that I think is important is that when you know your power, and you know your history, you know your greatness, you know your potential. So what we're doing right now, when we take a step back from all of this, we are robbing Black students of knowing their power and their potential when we ignore their history.
One of the things I worry about is, you know, all of this momentum that was created last year because of George Floyd's murder and Breonna Taylor and all these other sort of, you know, horrifying events involving Black people in the States and even in Canada, that we'll lose that momentum. And then conversations like this, I mean, we've already had them for so many years and we're only just, you know, starting to see change with courses like the one that you helped create. Do you worry about that? And do you think about how to keep the momentum and create more courses and integrate the syllabus so that it is more reflective of the communities that Canada sees in their school and in their classrooms?
Yeah, I worry about that a lot because what the initiatives that we see around diversity and courses like that, they come out of these reactionary moments. And, you know, you and I were at the Ryerson Review of Journalism together. And our cover story was about diversity. That was many years ago. And we're still not even near close place to having diversity in the newsroom environment and journalism in general. But we talk about it every time something comes up that makes us react to it. And so I do worry about that. And I think that is just how it has gone, because people care about something when it's in front of you for whatever reason. It could be for optics and performance. But at the end of the day, I think there are a lot of people who want to be doing this work. I think there are a lot of allies and students and just people in general who want to be learning and want to do better. And what this pandemic plus this other pandemic of Black death has taught us this summer is that there, people have time to read and educate themselves, and they are. Because if you walked into a bookstore this summer, back when you could walk into a bookstore, all the books about Black history and Black education, they were gone. Like there was nothing left on the shelf. So that tells me people are willing to spend their money and sit down and read books and chat about it online. We have an opening here where people want to learn. So despite whether this movement goes away and comes back, and it will because it comes back often, I think something has changed this summer and people are they genuinely want to learn. And on the other side of that, they genuinely want to educate.
In the epilogue of your book, you talk about how revolutionary universities and colleges and sort of the educational space has been in changing the narrative and dismantling the systems, and I'm quoting, that have benefited from keeping us silent. What advice do you have for the teachers who are creating courses at various different levels right now based on your experience in 2020? And what advice do you have for institutions who are trying to create constructive courses on these issues as well?
Bring what made you an educator, bring that to the table. This is your course. This is your world. So it's incredibly intimidating to be and can be a daunting task. But you, whatever made you great, you should be teaching your students that. Don't fall into pressure. Right now, there's a lot of pressure to do things a certain way, whether that's maybe on a faculty level or an admin level. You know what is best for your students. On a larger level, it's incredibly important that universities act fast to create these courses, but they also pay well. So if you want people to spend the semester creating a course from scratch, if you want them to be teaching this course plus, you know, in this environment, consider factor in the emotional labor as well. Pay people well. We're not seeing a lot of Black professors or professors of color getting tenure. So what do we do about that? It is all fine and great and dandy to have these courses, but what about the people teaching them? We need to create an environment where faculty of color is included and gets to stay. So we're hiring them long-term with long-term fee, with long-term payments, with long-term benefits.
I really wish that a course like yours existed when we were at Ryerson and a teacher like you existed when we were at Ryerson, because I think it would have changed a lot of minds and a lot of the direction that we went in. Thank you so much for doing what you do, Eternity, and for coming to talk about it with The Big Story.
Thanks, Fatima.
That was Eternity Martas, author of They Said This Would Be Fun and a former instructor at Ryerson School of Journalism. And that was The Big Story. You can find us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. If you have any questions, you can reach us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN or send us an email at thebigstorypodcast@rci.rogers.com. I'm Fatma Sayed. Thanks for listening.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.